Welcome back in, everyone, to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are so excited to be bringing you once again one of our favorite companies here in New York and their incredible work that they're doing. Of course, we are speaking of What Will the Neighbors Say? And joining us to talk about the final event of the season, of season 8, we have the co-artistic director, James Clements. He's here to talk to us about Queering the Archives, a benefit reading happening June 25th at 7 p.m. at Culture Lab LIC. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting whennow.com or wwtns.org. We are so excited to be once again featuring this amazing company. They recently did a production of a show called Third Law, which was a creator's pick. If you got to see it, I'm sure you're with us in saying it was amazing. If you didn't get to see it, catch it the next time it's done, because it was such an incredible experience. And now we love this upcoming event that's happening to essentially give back to the community, if you will. So let's bring in a person better suited to speak about this. Of course, our dear friend, James Clements. James, welcome back to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me back, Andrew. Lovely to be here as always.
I'm so glad you're here. First of all, congratulations on Third Law. What an amazing show. Please do something like that every year, because it was so cool. I could not stop raving about it. Everyone I was speaking with. So this was wonderful. And now you come to us with this great, great benefit, you know, Queering the Archives. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've, you know, the company has been doing this work together for 8 years now. And from the very beginning, we always programmed these benefit fundraisers for other essential nonprofits in the kind of theater adjacent space, but, you know, in the social justice space or healthcare or education access. And we've done, yeah, we do them every year. So we did a great one that kind of kicked it all off was back in 2017. We collaborated with my fellow Scott, Alan Cumming, at his bar Club Cumming, and did a big benefit for Puerto Rico hurricane relief after Hurricane Maria. We subsequently did an event for Period, which is a charity that provides menstrual aids and information to women plus folks, called Go With The Flow. We did one as part of the Queerly Festival last year called Affirm This, fighting against anti-trans and anti-gay legislation in schools in America. We did one called The Roe Must Go On after Roe v. Wade, which was all femme and GMB comedians and musicians raising money for safe abortion access. So the goal is to have events that are fun and engaging and a gathering space for our community while also raising funds for these really essential causes. And so this is our eighth such event. So we're very excited about it. It's always one of our favorite parts of our year, putting the evenings together.
That is fantastic. I love how much you give back to the community. You're not just a company that's there to create art, obviously, or further your thoughts or ideas, but you put giving back and really being a part of the community at the forefront of your organization. So this is wonderful. So how did you come upon this particular piece that will be read at the benefit?
So we, Sam and I, were members of the theater faculty at CUNY Queens College, a wonderful, wonderful school. Shout out to the CUNY system. They're going through some really devastating cuts at the moment. So call your representatives, call your local politicians and advocate if you can for CUNY, because it's an essential educational and community space in New York. But we were teaching there for a few years before Megan Healy, their department chair, asked us to be artists in residence at the college. And we worked with students, faculty, and local communities in Queens to build a play as the culmination of our residency last year called Traces, which followed the story of four immigrant families over a century in one apartment in Queens, navigating four pandemics. So Spanish flu, polio, HIV, and then COVID. And through that work, we just became really, really well acquainted with their incredible archival staff at the Queens College Archives as well as our partners on Traces, this amazing organization that is hosted partly by CUNY Queen's College and partly by the Queen's Public Library called the Queen's Memory Project. They're an oral history organization with a real focus on underrepresented histories, the things that sort of like, well, let's say we're not prioritized in history books and getting that kind of real lived history. So we had already relationships with all these wonderful stakeholders. And then last autumn, at the beginning of this season, we were invited to return to Queen's College and work with GLASA, which was formerly the Gay and Lesbian Society, now is the Gender, Love and Sexuality Alliance, but is a long-standing kind of queer organization at CUNY Queen's College. They had got a grant to digitize an incredible, really unique collection of journals that was used by GLASA going all the way back to nearly 40 years ago. They were a kind of proto text message. So people would leave messages for each other, before mobile phones. That was sort of how it was done. And what was so rich, and the reason I love making documentary theater, and I can speak for Sam and say the same for him, is you get this incredible real window into life's lived, because some of the entries are, about partying and about going over to someone's house and about going clubbing and going to a disco. And then some are about people that had really traumatic coming out experiences and were kicked out of their house. Some of them are about people becoming ill. Some of them are about people hooking up. There's this great kind of mix of everything in them. And so we worked with the current GLASA members at the college to create this devised piece. All of it's verbatim lifted from these journals. And it was then performed at the college in November. And so when we were deciding what organizations to support, there's so many, quite frankly, terrible things happening in our world right now. Like, take your pick of war and famine and, social injustices. So it was never about what's valuable or anything would be valuable. They are all valuable. But we thought, let's keep it close to home for this one organization we've worked with for years. And so this benefit raises money for the Queen's Memory Project and their oral history archives, as well as for the CUNY archives that are preserving not only queer history, but immigrant history and New York Black history and New York Asian history. And, Queens is the most diverse area on our planet. You know what I mean? In terms of kind of head count, square foot count variety. And so it just felt like a lovely button on both our eighth season and this beautiful relationship we've had with CUNY Queen's College to get to give back to them and make sure other people can experience these beautiful, histories and narratives and memory the way that Sam and I were able to.
I love all of that. Yes. No, that's incredible. Well, at the time of this recording, we are just under 2 weeks away from the benefit going up. And I'm curious to know, what has it been like developing this piece?
So we worked back in the autumn. We went in every week and worked with an incredible group of Queen's College students, as I said. And they, we had a fantastic kind of researcher, dramaturg who had been in our show, Alan Wong, who's an incredible brand new CUNY Queen's College grad. We also had a member of the CUNY faculty, Anna Cuscuz, who did extra research and dramaturgy for the project. And then on the Queen's archive side, we had Danica Stomper and Caitlin Waldron, who are both absolutely fantastic archivists. And Danica was the kind of project lead on this digitization. So we sat down and as a group in a big lecture theater with a big projector screen and, went through, pulled out things that spoke to different people. Everyone got to sort of advocate for the chunks they wanted and the storylines that spoke to them and the through lines. And we pulled a lot of, there's some beautiful poetry in the journals and there's some beautiful kind of essays in the journals. So we organize things, how Sam and I typically work when we're making documentary theater, and how I also work on my solo projects doing it, I think, is grouping things by theme, grouping things by idea and tone and texture. And so after a kind of first third of grab everything you like, bring it to the forefront, throw it into the salad bowl, then I would say the second third became a kind of distilling process. So really being like, what is essential here? Yes, this might be beautiful, but have we heard it before? Or does this work better actually breaking these six monologues up into lines and having it be a soundscape? And so really bringing it to its essential form. And then, at least for the first pass, and then we had a kind of last third where we staged it, and we worked with a brilliant immigrant sound designer who also worked on Traces and has worked on projects at Rattlestick with me, Liam Bellman Sharp, created some beautiful original music and voiceover soundscapes for traditions, excuse me, transitions. And so that led to the reading in November. And then for this go around, we have gathered some really, really incredible actors to work with us on it. And we've been having, great conversations and meetings and discussing the text with the team, which includes Emmy Brett, Isabel Criado, Cynthia Hughes, a great immigrant actor I met also at Rattlestick, Ashton Muniz, who's worked with me at The Cell and worked with us on Casa Abierta, another one of our fundraisers, Sky Pio Ross, who was one of our students at CUNY, and then stage managed Third Law, and Keith Weiss, who's a collaborator of Sam. So it's really family style. It's everyone everyone knows each other. There's a familiarity and a comfortability. Everyone is on the same page that this material is valuable and important. And then we'll get together the day of for a big in-person rehearsal. And the event itself will be in the evening, as you said, on the Tuesday, the 25th of June. $20 with an open wine bar. So we say, listen, if you went anywhere in New York and bought two glasses of wine, you would have spent more than $20. So yeah, come and have a glass of wine, hear these incredible actors read this really powerful history that's so important to our city, or the city we are in at the moment, and then stay in and have a dance and have another glass of wine and chat to someone new.
Yes, I who doesn't love a good wine bar is all I'm saying,
I
that
know.
always sweetens the deal there. So with
Absolutely.
this amazing benefit, with these wonderful artists coming together for this reading and for and with the organization that you're benefiting as well, what is the message or thought you hope audiences will take away from this evening?
Love that question, Andrew. I think there's probably a few, for me at least, there's a few layers to the answer. So I think I would want people to feel the excitement and enthusiasm that I feel about archives and about historical archival research, and taking it away from a sense that it's a highly academic or elitist or white space, even though it has been a lot of those things. So it's no one's fault that it reads that way, but to encourage folks to really feel empowered to go into libraries and go into archives and go into spaces and say, I want to see our history, I want to see my history, and really kind of demystify that. So I hope people leave with a kind of a heightened interest, social history and underrepresented history, and kind of new archival methods. I hope people leave with a renewed respect and appreciation for the CUNY system. Like I say, it's under fire, but it's absolutely essential in our city, educationally, cultural programming, family and childcare wise. Like, it's just an essential kind of organ of our city, and it must be preserved and supported. So I hope people leave informed and fired up about that. And then I kind of more artistically hope that people see the piece and think about the ways in which we are all so much I would like to believe more similar than different. And no matter how you identify in terms of gender and sexuality, and no matter what family and community looks like for you, that we all, bleed the same color, that we all feel the same emotions and have a lot of the same experiences, and everyone has a story if you just ask.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. I cannot tell you how much I relate to that. Absolutely. Well, I want to sidestep for a minute because, this benefit is wrapping up your eighth season at What Will the Neighbors Say, but there's something that you have beyond this that's happening. Can you tell us a little bit about this other project that you personally have going on?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny when, for the listeners, I guess, when you reached out about this, Andrew, I was in the thick of both projects, and in so many ways they speak to each other. So the other kind of documentary theater project I have at the moment is through a brilliant initiative. I do it, I live in Brooklyn, so I do it through the Brooklyn Arts Council, but I know that I know it happens in Queens and Manhattan art councils, I imagine, in the other boroughs too. It's a SUCASA program funded by the New York City Department of Culture and the New York City Department of the Aging, and they place artists in senior centers, either residential, I believe, or kind of day centers, which is the spaces I work in. And that artist pitches essentially a program that serves the seniors, whether it's sculpture or dance or music. And so I do, this is my third year doing it. I make documentary theater with predominantly immigrant seniors. That's my SUCASA program. So I spend months, I go to the center, I interview them about their lives and their past, present, futures, their thoughts on how Brooklyn has changed, their thoughts on home, family, what they expected being a senior would be like versus what it's been like, misconceptions about seniors, like we talk and talk. And then I work with a sound designer to turn those recordings into a verbatim audio play. And then I collaborate with an incredible Puerto Rican photographer, Paolo Caron Santiago, who's a dear friend and an artistic partner of mine. And we do a big portrait series of all the seniors, and it becomes a kind of audio visual document or snapshot of where that demographic is at that moment and how they see the world. And there's such a, at times, and massively to our detriment, we forget that the people in the world at the moment who know the most and have seen the most and have survived the most are our seniors, our elders. And this, I hope, is a program that really honors and uplifts their voices. And it's one of my favorite creative things I do each year.
That is incredible. Just when I thought y'all couldn't give back anymore, look what you're
Oh,
doing. This is amazing.
very kind.
So, with this documentary, I'm really curious to know,
Third
you
year.
mentioned that this was your third year working with this community. What has it been like creating and putting all of this together?
So, for me, that the as a theater maker, as a documentary theater maker, I think that the true north is the people that you're making work with, centering them, having them really lead the direction of the piece, and being there as a facilitator. But fundamentally, an impulse to serve the room rather than dominate it. And I hope that that's true of all my creative work, but I think it's especially essential with these verbatim pieces. And so for me, it's really sinking in with the seniors, really getting to know them and getting a sense of their priorities and their values and what they want to talk about. And I always say that they have the power to mandate things and veto things, and I have neither of those powers. That it's up to them. They can answer a question or not. They can answer a question and ask me not to record it. They can change their mind the next week. Because people talk about, really, it's kind of like the journals again. It just rem a reminder of the richness and variety and complexities of every person, because some of the interviews, we talk about domestic violence, and we talk about how the experience of being a woman identifying person in Brooklyn, even if that's not necessarily the language that the seniors are using, that's what they're talking about, right? Is the things that have changed in the last 50 years for good or for ill as they see it. And so sometimes we talk about, yeah, heavy topics, physical discipline of children, decline in religion, domestic abuse, loneliness, loss of partnership, elder abuse, the dangers of the MTA. And then other times we talk about dancing and being home in Dominican Republic, or for me, home in Scotland, and like what the local beer is, or we talk about music, or I get to hear about the feuds in the centers and the people that like, the kind of the people vying for popularity and nominations to the senior boards. And I get a really rounded, rich view. And yeah, I think that a theme that really reoccurs, excuse me, when I'm working on this is the sense from the elders that they are invisible, or they're not seen, or they're not heard. And I think it's such a travesty because they have such a wealth of knowledge and experience to offer, if people would only tune into that frequency. And so I find it's challenging in the way of building a narrative and making sure the piece has a flow, because they've earned the right to do whatever they want all the time. So sometimes they don't come in, sometimes they don't want to do the interview that they agreed to. And so it's almost a good refresher for me every year, because I'm like, right, what are the whys of my work? Is it to have the audio quality of this moment be perfect? Is it to have the narrative button be exactly timed the way I want it? Or does that all matter less than serving people with? And the answer is yes, it does matter less. So it takes me out of my, fighting my perfectionism streak. This is a great reminder of why I do what I do, and the impact ideally that our work as theater makers really should have if we're able to do it right, or in what I feel is the right priorities to have. It keeps me grounded, and I make wonderful friends every year.
That is marvelous. Wow. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't give the opportunity either once again or for the first time, I should say, but to find out where is this documentary playing at? How can we all see your work?
So this one is a listening party at the Senior Center this week. So not necessarily public facing, but I am speaking with the Brooklyn Arts Council about if there's a way to archive or share the podcast play through the council. And certainly there's a number of Brooklyn Arts Council events in June that I think we're going to display the pictures at. So they'll be different. They'll be around Brooklyn. They'll have a life around Brooklyn. And I encourage any artists listening who are makers or practitioners or performers, or would be interested in a program like this, to check out their local Arts Council website. Applications are usually in the autumn and the residencies are throughout the spring. You definitely won't regret it.
Oh, that sounds fabulous. I always look for a good excuse to go to Brooklyn. So this sounds wonderful. This is just up my alley. And
Fantastic.
this brings us to our final question for this first part, which is, who are you hoping to have access not only to querying the archives, but also to this documentary that you're making?
I think that, for me, my person, we all have sort of the big reasons that we make art, and I hope anyone who sees or engages with this work is touched and moved and provoked. Our mission as a company, and my own work, as I hope it's provocative and makes people think and reflect. But specifically, I hope it serves immigrants. That's the audience that I'm, not that it's a monolithic audience, right? There's huge variety within it, but it's my work is multilingual. This is a bilingual piece of documentary theater. So I hope that other immigrants and other seniors and other stakeholders in these stories get to see their lives and hear and see their lives reflected back to them.
Second part of the show, of course, you know we love giving the listeners a chance to get to know you a bit more. And I mean, you are basically also an artist in residence with us. I mean, I feel like every other month we have a wonderful opportunity to talk. So it's been wonderful getting to know you. And I actually want to start by asking you, you know, what is your dream show or role?
Dream show or role? I've always thought I'd love to do the MC in cabaret if it was a very distinctive and specific production that was something new to it. I think that's such a kind of timeless part. I would also love to work on a production of Sweat. I always have been so drawn to that piece, and I love, you know, Glasgow, my hometown in Scotland, has a really strong history of working class political theatre. Men Should Weep, like many pieces, and so I think, yeah, Sweat would be a big one, especially if it was over in the US, or if it was done in Scotland at somewhere like the Fringe. I just think it's such an important piece. And then there's a show I'm working on trying to create right now, fundraising for and kind of doing original research for now, about the corpse of Eva Perón, which it's not a widely known story, but well, obviously her story is widely known, and thanks to Mr. Lloyd Webber and Madonna and Patti LuPone, very widely known. But in real life, her body was embalmed when she passed away and displayed for many, many days and weeks. And then after her husband's government fell, began this kind of straight, you couldn't make it up, 20-year journey across the world, from everywhere from being kept behind a cinema screen to being buried in Italy in the grave of an Italian nun who had died in Argentina. Like, you really couldn't make it up. So I'm working with another very treasured collaborator of mine, Talia Romina, who's developing the idea with me. She's a Dominican Argentinian performer who grew up in Queens. The idea of kind of tracing this odyssey of this body with Eva Perón's ghost as our narrator. So it's a very kind of ambitious, large scale piece. And so I think that's my current dream piece.
That is a wonderful list. I love, love that. Some of my favorites on there as well. Well, of course, we've had you on N-teenth times, which is wonderful. So I feel like we should start cataloging these, but I would love to hear another one. You know, can you share with us another of your favorite theater memories?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I'm allowed to say this, though if I'm not, I'm sorry to our director and designers. But the current version of Third Law that we just played, it was very successful at Culture Lab. We extended, we added shows. It was great. But as anyone who's seen the piece will recall, you know, we say this is an audience-based piece. This is really driven by the audience, and we mean it. It's not an illusion of that. It cannot work or begin without audience movement. And one of the first shows we did, and thank God it only happened once, really, there's a moment at the beginning of the show where someone has to be the brave person who takes a risk and does something that feels intuitive in order for the piece to begin. And maybe it was the second or third show, Andrew, nobody started. And we stood still, the six actors stood still in a line for 10 minutes. And we had joked, you know, we were like, maybe there'll be a night where the audience doesn't do it and we'll end up standing there for 40 minutes. Ha ha ha, like, can you imagine? And as the minutes ticked by, I was like, oh my God, we're going to stand here for 40 minutes and then the house lights are going to come on and we're going to walk out of the room and that's going to be the show. And eventually someone was brave and did it and we were rescued. But that was hilarious. I was like, wow, we've really set ourselves quite the challenge of really putting our money where our mouth is and making this audience based. But it was a huge risk. And that was a night that it really nearly got us.
That is a wonderful memory. Frightening, but wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Well, as we wrap things up, I want to just ask, I know that, we're closing season eight. I'm not sure if you've set season nine, but are there any other projects or productions you or What Will the Neighbors Say have coming down the pipeline we might be able to plug?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're beginning, I don't think I'm allowed to say where yet, but we're beginning a big development residency for our Spanish Civil War piece at the Barricades, which had a reading at Brooklyn Art House in this season. And we're aiming to close out next season with a production of. So we'll be doing lots of research and development for that multilingual history play. And then we're also about to announce. God, I want to tell you all of it now, Andrew, but I'll get in trouble. But we're about to announce a big new initiative that will engage us as a company with lots of new theater makers that we'll be announcing in the coming weeks. And then hopefully some next steps on Third Law, but I'm going to be well behaved and keep my mouth closed on all of it.
Oh my goodness. Well, some exciting things coming then that we need to keep tabs on. So, finally, if our listeners want more information about Queering the Archives or about your documentary or about any of these things from What Will the Neighbors Say, or they want to reach out to you, how can they do so?
So the best way to connect with us is through our website, wwtns.org, or through our Instagram at WWTNS Theatre. To reach out to me about my work, you can visit my website, james-clements, clemente.com, or through Instagram, I'm at james_clements92. And tickets for Queering the Archive are moving quickly. It's a small, intimate event, so get them while you can. They're at whennow.com, and the link directly to our page is in our link tree on Instagram and our website too.
Well, James, it has been a true delight as always to speak with
It
you.
always is so lovely.
I love anytime you come on our show. You and Sam both always bring something new and exciting. And so I'm really excited to see what season nine holds. I'm very pumped about this upcoming benefit reading and for all the work you're doing. So thank you so much for your time today and for speaking with me.
Thank you, my friend. It's always such a treat.
My guest today has been the amazing artist and co-artistic director, James Clements, who joined us to speak about his company, What Will the Neighbors Say's presentation of Queering the Archives, a benefit reading. It's happening June 25th at 7 p.m. at Culture Lab LIC. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting whennow.com or wwtns.org. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting in our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But you're going to want to head over to one of those two links to get your tickets for this event. They're going fast, and you are not going to want to miss it. There are some amazing artists involved with this, not to mention a wonderful, wonderful cause that it's benefiting. And make sure you also stay tuned to the upcoming announcement of season nine from What Will the Neighbors Say? I cannot wait to see what wonderful ideas and works they've come up with, as well as other projects that they've got being developed. So keep your tabs that way. But for right now, get your tickets for Queering the Archives, a benefit reading happening June 25th at 7 p.m. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.